Good evening, everyone. This is James Clendenin, and it is time to start our Team Zenith call. This is week 13, I believe it's week 13, and boy, we've got a good one for you tonight. And before I get started, this morning I made a few comments about one of the homework pieces that I got in, and the person that sent the homework in did really well. He had a good week, had got a lot of things done, but he was kind of beating himself up about not getting as much done as he wanted to, and some of life was getting in the way. And I believe that the best way to, let's say, alleviate those life challenges is to be able to have a daily planner and carve out those hours that you need in order to work this business to make it go for you. And one of the best daily planners that I have ever seen is My Daily Director. And you can look in more into that. It's directed right towards EcoQuest. As a matter of fact, it was done by Master Manager Bill Davis, and I think it's that you probably would want to look at. And you can look at or get an idea more about it at mydailydirector.com. I think I suggested a few weeks back, but first of all, you need a daily planner of some sort, and this is as good, if not better, than any I've ever seen. I intend, as a matter of fact, talking to Bill this weekend and see if he'll come and do a conference call with us on one of our Team Zenith nights, so y'all will get more additional training from a different perspective in that aspect. Tonight we're going to talk about Think and Grow Rich, and I've asked for volunteers at the beginning of the call if there's anybody that would like to give their thoughts upon what they believe the secret was. And we did have a volunteer. If she will, she can press 6 and chime right on in, and we'd be glad to hear from you. Dorothy, did you miss your cue?
No, I was there. I don't know what happened.
Well, go ahead and give us your thoughts.
Okay. I said I think it's a matter of thoughts. I think the thought system in your brain is the, whatever you program into your thoughts is what you're going to be doing.
That's excellent, Dorothy. That's pretty doggone close. For the first time that you ever read the book and come up with that, that's outstanding, as a matter of fact. Let's go ahead and do this. It's amazing to me that we talked a little bit about revealing a secret, and we had more people dial in tonight than we have in probably a month, wanting to find out what the secret was. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill is it's undoubtedly the most read success classic in history. And I remember the very first time I read it, which was, probably a dozen years ago. And I often wondered how many people understood the secret that Napoleon Hill speaks about in the beginning of the book. And in the beginning of the book, as a matter of fact, he says that the secret is mentioned over 100 times throughout the book. And, I must have read Think and Grow Rich 3 or 4 times before I even had a clue about what that secret was. And it was the very first book, as a matter of fact, that I ever read on self-development, and it's still my favorite. I nowadays read it at least once a year. Well, the last time that I read it, I decided it was time to figure out what this secret was, and so I spent a lot of time with it. My goal here today is to identify what the secret is by analyzing the story in the first chapter about Edwin C. Barnes and his quest to become a partner with Thomas Edison. Now, those of you that did the homework and read the first 4 chapters, you know what I'm talking about. Now, keep in mind that this story, this on Edwin Barnes there, it only takes up about 3 pages in the book. Nevertheless, I took 3 full pages of notes from just this one story. And I really do believe that you'll learn something from this today, and you can immediately apply what you learned to your EcoQuest business, and to life for that matter, to become more successful. Edwin C. Barnes was a man who had developed a desire to become a business partner of Thomas Edison. Now, Mr. Hill does not provide any real detail about who Barnes was or what he did prior to developing this desire, but let's just assume that he's just like me and you. Well, maybe with the difference being that he lived in a different time period. Now, Barnes was probably fascinated by this inventor, and he knew that if he formed an association with this guy that he'd make the most of this opportunity. So the story starts by Mr. Hill describing how Mr. Barnes possessed a burning desire to work with Mr. Edison and not for Mr. Edison. Big difference. Now, we know something about Mr. Barnes at this point because during that time period, you know, most people were happy to find a job. But he wasn't looking for a job. He was looking for an opportunity. So this clearly identifies Mr. Barnes as a ambitious entrepreneur, a risk taker, a person who wasn't afraid of thinking big. Another key point is that Barnes knew exactly what he wanted to accomplish. You know, he wasn't, you know, hem-hawing around about, and he wasn't indecisive about what he wanted to do. He wasn't confused, and he didn't have mixed motives. His desire was to become a business partner with Thomas Edison, period. In other words, he had a definite goal. But let's dig a little deeper into this chapter. So here's a guy, he's got this idea, but he has no resources to act on it. That may sound familiar to some of you. How many times have you had an idea, but you backed away from it because you didn't have a clue about how to accomplish it, so you decided not to do anything? See, remember, you know, no decision is a decision. Well, let's see what made Mr. Barnes different. He didn't know Mr. Edison personally, and we have no way of knowing if he knew someone who knew Edison, you know, in order to make some sort of an introduction. So let's assume that he didn't know anyone, and we also know that he didn't have enough money to pay for his train fare to Orange, New Jersey, where Edison worked. In a situation like this, what would have you all done? You know, most of us would probably given up and went about life as usual. We would have determined that the dream was unrealistic, and or we'd have said something like, you know, this just wasn't the right time. Well, what did Barnes do? You know, we don't know exactly how he obtained the funding, but we do know that he ended up in Orange, New Jersey. And if you'll remember what happened next there, but before I tell you that, there's a fellow named Jack Canfield who wrote a book called The Success Principles. And he describes what happens after you get an idea or a goal or an inspiration. And he calls it considerations, fears, and roadblocks. Now, you can bet that Mr. Barnes experienced one of these after he conceived this idea and he realized he was missing some key resources, you know, like train fare and a relationship with the inventor. Well, since Mr. Hill didn't identify, you know, how Barnes raised the money for the train fare, let's assume that he stepped out on faith and obtained this money and he made the trip to New Jersey. Maybe he used his brother's credit card. The main point is that Mr. Barnes took action, and he assumed that he could handle any obstacle or challenge that would occur on his way to his destiny. So, what can we learn from Mr. Barnes so far? We can learn that start your quest for success with a burning desire, look for opportunity, and never be afraid to be thinking big. Sometimes you have to take action based upon faith. You need to develop strategies to combat considerations, fears, and roadblocks before they show up. Assess your resources before you start a project. At least you know what you don't know and you know what you don't have. Okay, so now we know that Mr. Barnes possessed this burning desire to become a partner with Mr. Thomas Edison. And he conceived of an idea, and now he needed a plan of action. Well, let's just see what Barnes did to make this dream become a reality. First thing he did, Mr. Barnes arranged to meet with Mr. Edison, where he made an unsolicited proposal related to going into business with him. And Barnes had a definite chief aim. He came to the point quickly, and he was extremely clear on what he wanted. So Mr. Barnes teaches us to be clear about what you want, and not to be afraid to go directly to the person who can help us with our goals and make a request without any kind of trepidation. Now, what allowed Mr. Barnes to show up unannounced and propose this partnership to Thomas Edison? Now, keep in mind, Mr. Edison was one of these, he was an honored and respected all around the world for his inventions. He was on the same level as somebody like Bill Gates or Donald Trump back then. So, Mr. Barnes, he was so determined to become a partner with the great Edison that he possessed this no matter what attitude, that nothing was going to stand in the way of him accomplishing his goal. Now, if you'll remember, if you read this chapter, if you remember Thomas Edison, he sensed Mr. Barnes' determination and drive just by looking at the intensity in his eyes. Now, what does that tell us? What this tells us is that we must be so filled with desire for our goals that those who come in contact with us can literally feel it. Now, I'm sure that some of you all have walked into a room and there was somebody in there that just totally stood out, and he exuded this aura of success. Well, the bottom line here is that Barnes desired this business relationship with Edison and that he would not be denied by anyone or anything. He gave himself no way out. It was either a partnership or bust. Folks, have you ever accomplished every goal that you ever set for yourself? You know, I bet you if you think about it, you would discover that the reason you did not accomplish a particular goal was probably because you gave yourself a way out, meaning that, you know, you held yourself back from the full force of your energy or total focus, you know, on accomplishing that goal. Here's a question for you. Have you ever given yourself a way out of your current goals? The way out usually is disguised as a good excuse, a perfectly legitimate reason, a situation, a challenge, a handicap, a circumstance. Remember, we talked about this in the very first week of Team Zenith. You know, any excuse will do, right? Now, think about this. I'm going to give you an insight here. You see, before Mr. Barnes departed for New Jersey, he had already succeeded at his desire of becoming a partner with Mr. Edison. He succeeded because he had already made up his mind that he was going to work for Edison. It was a final decision, and all of his thoughts were lined up to support that decision. His thoughts were established, and the only remaining issue was to make reality match his thoughts. Now, don't miss that statement. If you do, you miss what I believe is the secret of Napoleon Hill, what he's talking about. Okay, so what do you reckon happened to the tenacity and the persistence of people today? You know, we see that they don't have as much as they used to, or as much as some people have anyway. Why do we give up so easily when the road gets a little bit rocky? And, you know, here's half of us throwing in the towel just because we get our lip bloody a little bit. I know one thing. Mr. Barnes' thoughts won the business partnership with Mr. Edison even before he arrived in front of this inventor to ask. Asking, that was just the formality. Folks, were you surprised to learn that after Barnes showed up and made the offer, that Mr. Edison actually made a counteroffer? Now, his counteroffer was not, you know, the glorious partnership that Barnes had wanted, but Edison did offer Barnes a job. Barnes traveled all the way to New Jersey only to be offered a job, the one thing that he did not want, and that he definitely didn't go there to get. Now, ask yourself, what would you have done? Would you have settled, take the job, and live happily ever after? Now, I can hear the majority of our prospects saying, well, hey, at least it was a steady job. Well, although Barnes did not get that partnership to start off with, he stayed focused on his overall desire. And I'm sure that you all have heard this saying that you can lose a few battles, but make sure you win the war. Well, Barnes may have lost that first battle, but in his mind was focused on the war, and he was convinced that he possessed the strategy and the will to become a winner in this battle, you know, to become a partner with Mr. Thomas Edison. So he accepted the job while he basically regrouped his forces for the next major battle, if you will. Mr. Barnes' persistence, it kept him working for Edison over many months. But remember, that was not his goal. Can you imagine the frustration that he must have felt to sit there every day and realize that he had not fulfilled this desire? You know, he was so close and yet so far away. You know, I think most people would have called it quits and left after just a few months. But you see, Mr. Barnes, he was not most people. Mr. Barnes' response was to intensify his desire for this major definite purpose. He turned up the heat on his desire, and he wanted that goal even more. Now, up to now, what can we learn from Mr. Barnes? Well, Communicate clearly and succinctly. Ask for what you want. Find out who can help you with your goals and then ask them for help. Audacity is a required trait for every ambitious entrepreneur. Develop the no matter what attitude. Burn your ships to remove the chance of giving yourself a way out. Very importantly is your thoughts determine your results. If you think you've won, you have won. Now, make reality match those thoughts. When things don't go as planned, you stay focused, you be patient, and you watch for your opportunity. Okay, so up to now, we know that Mr. Edwin Barnes met with Mr. Thomas Edison. He made a proposal for partnership, and Edison made a counteroffer by offering Barnes a job instead of a partnership. But instead of giving up and going back home, Mr. Barnes accepted the offer to work for Edison. Now, let's see what happens next in Barnes' quest to become a partner with one of the greatest inventors that ever lived. Mr. Barnes remained fixed on the idea of a partnership with Mr. Edison. It caused him to remain ready for an opportunity when it presented itself, and he knew in his mind that the opportunity would present itself. So how do you think Mr. Barnes kept himself motivated? Can you imagine the frustration he must have experienced? Well, what he did was that he used positive self-talk, and he continued to reaffirm his desire for this business partnership with Mr. Edison. And he staked his life on his desire, and he took on a no-fail attitude, which means that failure was not an option, that he would not allow circumstances of failure to occur, and he was just totally unstoppable in his pursuit of his dream. Do you know anyone who is that definite? Do you know anyone who has identified their major definite purpose and who has stood on that purpose until it became a downright obsession? See, Barnes was so determined and persistent that he would have stayed as long as it took to capture that dream. But something happened. During his daily work, Mr. Barnes is always, he's always on the lookout to be of service and to spot potential opportunities. And it seems that Barnes was pretty observant because his big break, it came in a way that was totally different, from a different direction than where he was expecting it. His level of attraction was so strong that he attracted his desire, not in the way he wanted it, but in the way that evidently a higher power wanted it. Mr. Napoleon Hill states that opportunity often comes disguised as misfortune or temporary defeat. Well, I'm sure that Mr. Barnes must have experienced a lot of frustration and a lot of discouragement because things were just not moving fast enough for him. And I'm also sure that most of us would probably fail to recognize opportunity because it wasn't presented in a neatly wrapped package labeled your opportunity of a lifetime. Well, here's what happened. Mr. Edison created a dictating machine that his salesmen were not very enthusiastic about selling. They didn't think it would sell without a lot of work, basically what it amounted to. So Mr. Barnes, on the other hand, he immediately recognized opportunity. And that is because his mind, it was oriented to spot opportunities all around it. See, he clearly recognized that this was an opportunity to fulfill his desire of becoming Edison's partner by taking the new invention and selling it to the best of his ability. Mr. Barnes saw opportunity where others saw obstacles and fears, and this ultimately led to his goal of becoming a partner with Edison while everyone else continued to sit back and complain how they couldn't sell these dictating machines. Basically, they had a lot of excuses. Does that sound familiar? Mr. Barnes, he displayed outstanding confidence by suggesting to Edison that he could sell these machines, and that's exactly what he did. He went out and sold the crap out of them. Barnes lived up to his claim by selling the machines so successfully that Edison gave him a contract to distribute the machines nationally. Now, that's exploiting an opportunity. He hit a home run there. It was like the grand slam in business, and he became a business partner with the great Thomas Edison. Goal achieved and fulfilled. Now, what can we learn from Mr. Barnes? Well, Mr. Barnes teaches us that thoughts are things and that our thoughts can make us rich. Have you ever heard Mike Jackson say that? Thoughts are things. About every talk he's ever done, thoughts are things, and thoughts can make you rich. For example, Barnes, he earned $2 or $3 million based on this one idea. And, you know, no doubt he became a very wealthy man. But his greatest asset was not the money that he earned, but the fact that he learned how to take his thoughts and transmute them into material rewards by the application of certain principles. Remember, the only assets he started with was his desire, his knowledge of what he wanted, and his determination to stick with it no matter how long it took to realize it. So, what's the secret of Think and Grow Rich? Well, actually, the secret was revealed to us by a fellow named Mr. Earl Nightingale, who's one of the pioneers of the self-improvement industry, and he's also the co-founder of Nightingale Conant. In one of his audios, he talks about this. See, one night he jumped up because in an instant he was given the insight about what the secret was. Naturally, he ran to his wife and said, I got it. And I can just imagine what her reaction was. Earl Nightingale told his wife that the secret that he had been trying to find all these years is that you become what you think about most of the time. Your thoughts control who and what you become. Now, I know this is not an earth-shattering insight, but this secret has puzzled me for years until I recently started paying attention, you know, to what Mr. Hill and other writers have been saying and writing about all this time. The key to really getting this insight is to examine how you think and how the results, you know, the results you're getting right now. If your results are not what you want them to be, examine what you have been thinking about on a daily basis, and you'll see that your results match your thoughts. Exactly. So if you want to change your results, change what you think about on a daily basis. Your outer physical world will match your inner mental world perfectly. And if you have not aligned your thinking, then you will have the experience of incongruence. In other words, nothing will match. Folks, the best way to find out if your thoughts are aligned with reality is to look at what you are currently experiencing. Let me give you an example. If you want to experience success in EcoQuest, you first have to identify what success means to you. Remember us doing the 20 reasons in the beginning of Team Zenith? Now, I hope you all understand how important that was. Does success to you, does it mean things like promotions or more money, more responsibility, greater challenges, recognition, free time? You know, what does it mean to you? Then the next step is to look at what is actually happening in your current environment. Are you having the experience of more money and free time? See, if the answer is no, that means your thoughts are not in alignment with your desires. Now, you might be asking yourself, how can I align my thoughts with my desires? Well, the only thing I can tell you there is to go back, reread Think and Grow Rich, and then spend a lot of time in Chapter 2, which is Desire, the Starting of All Achievement. And folks, there you have it. There is the secret to Think and Grow Rich, and I do hope that you all will read that book time and time again, because as someone said before the call started, every time you read it, matter of fact, I think it was Glenn, that every time you read it, you will learn something more. And I have, every time I read it, I get something more out of it. And I think that that's because, you know, our attitudes and all change. And as those things change and we gather experience and confidence, and we're able to see things a little differently. And we're able to comprehend things a little differently. And I'm glad that I read the book again, because once again, I got a tremendous amount out of it. And not only that, I now know the secret myself. All right, I'm going to go back to where Glenn Fraser, who was a co-worker and a friend of Dr. Napoleon Hill, he's going to have a few words to say about his relationship with Napoleon Hill. Glenn, I'm going to go back to where just you can come in. All you've got to do is press 6, all right?
All callers are muted and may unmute themselves by pressing 6.
Okay, Glenn, press 6 again.
We got it.
Okay, great.
Okay, well, back in the early part of the 1960s, several of us in Central Illinois got together and decided we were going to start an insurance company. And I was one of the region directors. After we got the company started, we decided that we had the wrong people on the board. So we had an uprising and elected a new board. And at that time, Napoleon Hill and I were two of the people that were added to the existing board. And he was a very interesting man. He was a very wiry person and always impeccably dressed and always had a big smile. And although he was small in stature, when he entered a room, he was a giant. I mean, everyone was aware of that. And he helped us immeasurably on the insurance company by presenting his story to groups of people. And it was always advertised in the local papers that he was going to be speaking in behalf of this insurance company. And so anyway, he had exactly the same story to tell each time. And after the first dozen times that we heard it, we all felt that we could have given it also. But the largest presentation we made was to a new assembly hall that had just been built at the University of Illinois. But some of the other meetings were smaller. But he lived his life just exactly the way that he portrays what you should do in his book, So Rich. Now, he had numerous other books that he wrote after that one, but none of them ever equaled Think and Grow Rich. He became a millionaire, and back in those days, a millionaire meant a lot more than it does today. There were very few people who reached that stature of life.
That was back in the 60s, right, Glenn?
Right.
Right.
And so he, making these millions, he lost all of it to his first wife. In a divorce, but he regained all of it back in about a year and a half. And he says that after you've done something like that once, it's always easier to do it again. And he formed the first edition of his Success Unlimited magazine, and it was originally about a 5x8 book and intended for sales-oriented people. And he sold a lot of them to the larger companies who wanted to train as their sales staff. And then he sold the rights to the magazine, and it became a large, what I would call a standard-sized magazine. But he was, as I say, a very interesting person in that he actually lived what he was teaching. And his main thrust was the statement that whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. And he preached that to us several times. During the time that we were on the board, if a problem would come up, he'd say, well, let's find a solution for it and then go for it. And it always worked. And when we were selling stock in that company, we told everyone that this was a long-term investment and that they should expect to spend at least 10 years in the company before they saw any profit. But it didn't work that way. At the end of the first 5 years, we sold the company. Well, actually, we merged with a another insurance company. And at that time, we were able to pay everyone that was a stockholder originally in the firm five times what they paid for their stock. And I used to jokingly say, what happened to all these people that used to call me and complain about the price of the stock and things like that? They all disappeared after they got their money. But anyway, our success is largely due to Napoleon Hill. And privately, we always called him Nappy. But we never did that when there was anyone around that wasn't on the inner circle, so to speak. Everything was Dr. Hill. And we all spoke very highly of him. He was, as I say, I believe, the most unforgettable character that I'll ever meet. So anyway, that's the way I got to know him. Still remember him today, and I, as James mentioned a while ago, I reread his book regularly, because I always find something different in it, in spite of the fact that I've read it so many times.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, Glenn. I appreciate you coming back on this evening and giving us a review of your relationship with Napoleon Hill. He was quite an author. I've read a couple of his other books, too. No doubt about it, he talked the talk and he walked the walk. He's unlike some authors that just go out and they're creative and able to put something on paper and sell a lot. This guy, you know, he lived what he talked about, and it's just amazing to me. The book is, what, something like 50 years old, and yet it's still it's a classic. It's one of the best ever written. A lot of the self-improvement gurus today, you know, a lot of their work is based upon the principles that was found in Think and Grow Rich. Don't you agree with that, Glenn?
Yeah, very definitely. I think all of them pick up some part of his thinking.
Well, I know that I'll continue reading that. Folks, if y'all remember, Glenn Frazier is the fellow that on one of the, it's been a few weeks ago, but Glenn's about 80 years old, and he was just returning from a self-development course that he'd taken in another state. Here he is, still doing self-development. Now, I admire that kind of ambition and determination and, you know, wanting to expand his demeanor. He's working EcoQuest. He's doing well in EcoQuest. And I really appreciate you, Glenn. I thank you for coming back tonight and talking to us some more.
Okay.
All right, folks, that's all we have. I'm going to go back to open line. And if you all got any questions for Glenn or myself, we're here to answer them for you.
All callers are unmuted.
Thanks, Glenn. And James, that was a great call. And it's one I really wish I had on recording.
Do we have an item number for the Think and Grow Rich through Mac services, James?
To my knowledge, they don't sell it through Mac.
Okay, we just pick it up at a bookstore then?
Yeah, any bookstore's got it. It's still a heavily read and in-demand book.
Okay. Well, I'll check Amazon.com and just order it online then.
Yeah, Amazon.com's got it. Pick up a paperback copy of it for probably, $5-$10.
Okay. All right, I will do that. Thank you for the call and the information tonight, guys. Good night.
Good night. We appreciate y'all being here this evening.